reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 6, Text 9. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ekada Nigatam Gehad Duhantim Nishagam Pati Sapo Tatsat Padas Vrishta Kripanam Kalachodita. Once upon a time, my poor mother, when going out one night to milk a cow, was bitten on the leg by a serpent influenced by supreme time. Purport. That is the way of dragging a sincere soul nearer to God. The poor boy was being looked after only by his affectionate mother, and yet the mother was taken from the world by the supreme will in order to put him completely at the mercy of the Lord. Someone just got on, and I can tell when people don't mute their phone because I can hear them breathing. So, okay, I just, please, that's always important. Okay, so I always like to give an overview. People do like it, so we know that this is the first canto is the history of the Bhagavatam, and the history of the Bhagavatam begins with Vyas, and then Vyas means, of course, Narada, his guru. And he gets chastised after trying to edit the Vedas. And an editor is very expert at language, so what he does is he makes sure that the thoughts that are presented are understood by the audience it's being presented to. Just like when Narottam edited my book, Greetings from Vrindavan, I'm so glad that he did. You know, some things he just said, of course, they're my journals. He said, no, if this goes at all to a wider audience, this won't be understood. You have to take it out. And, of course, as a writer, I was attached, but he was my fearless editor. And, prevailed on certainly many of the points. And now when I look at the book, I'm very glad because I can see some things I said writing directly to disciples and a devotee audience may not have been understood to an audience that's a little bit beyond that. So, you know, an editor, like Prabhupada wanted his books edited, he said, for clarity and force. So Vyas had to edit the whole Vedas, and in the presentation to the people that he kind of chose according to those people, he made a mistake not really taking into account, that people are really short-lived and not so conversant in this age with language and philosophy, and that the kind of indirect process that he was presenting would not get to the goal. And if your presentation, although very systematic, doesn't bring people to the goal, then it's incomplete. So the darshanam of philosophy was Akila darshanam. And to hit home this point, he began to illustrate this with his own life, and how by the direct presentation of Krishna consciousness and the association of devotees, how effective it was, even though his unfortunate situation, how he became elevated. And you kind of get from his life, because he's telling it to Narada Muni, what messages to be presented, especially in this age, for people to be elevated. And that's chanting and hearing, and that means the association of sadhus. These are the key things, sadhu sangha. And sadhu sangha means chanting and hearing about Krishna. Because when you associate with the sadhu, and you become attracted to his nature, that's his nature. His nature is bhakti. And bhakti means glorify the object of your love. So this is actually the process. And it's the same thing for our bhajan instructions, our instructions on bhajan. I'm writing a book now, not a book, but a comprehensive article on Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Rag Marg. And it becomes, it's so clear. I mean, my God, I've been researching, and from every one of our acharyas, although in Raghunuga Bhakti, Smaran is very important, it's described like it's the commander in chief or something, but, you know, or the general, but Kirtan is the emperor. Kirtan rules. Even Sanatana Goswami says, you know, I try to control my mind by, you know, I forgot, by the process of hearing, but then I try to bind it then by the ropes of smarn or remembrance. And then, finally I got it by the chains of, you know, I got it by the chains of kirtan. Yeah. Distracted, I saw the musicians come up. So, you know, this is the problem. And actually speaking, this commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when the sages of Namasharanya asked, what is the duty of a man who's about to die? What is the duty of a man who's about to die, and what should he not do? And the answer is, etan nividyamana anam. But the thing is, you know, it talks about chanting. And the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this verse, you know, describes all the processes, shravanam, kirtanam, and smaranam, hearing, chanting, remembering are the best. Of all those processes, kirtan is the best. And in kirtan, nam kirtan is the best. Because there's lila kirtan, there's rupa kirtan, but nam kirtan is the best. And of nam kirtan, chanting the names of your beloved Lord is best. So, this is the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is recommending kirtan, actually. That's the Bhagavatam. Kirtan, kirtan. Nam kirtan, rupa kirtan, guna kirtan, lila kirtan. That's the Bhagavatam. So he explains then directly that the best thing is to chant, but if you can't, then engage what you have a natural affection for in Krishna's service. And while working for Krishna's pleasure in this way, due to affection for Krishna, naturally you'll chant his name and remember him. So there's no process that goes around kirtan. It's all meant to give you an attraction for kirtan. That's why I'm so happy today. I don't get so many of these opportunities, and I take them. Just to sit, last night I sat for 2.5 hours in a kirtan, just listening, and it was nice. I spoke a little bit before, which is also nice. And seeing also gradually up here how people are come to Krishna consciousness, even without a particular temple or something like that. One lady came to the kirtan, that came to my classes before. And, you know, she goes to church. And I asked her, you know, she said, you know, I really, really feel like someone just got on. They have to mute their phone. I can always hear when someone's just their breath or something, like don't breathe into the phone. But when I was with this lady, you know, she goes, I said, well, why don't you just go to church? Because before she said she goes to church, and I don't, what is it? I don't know. My mood is not converting. My mood is to share and to teach. I said, why don't you just go to church? She said, I just questioned her because she was saying, my inner development, I really need what you have. And she said that, well, And it came down, well, you know, that provides the social needs of my family. There's a nice Sunday school. Yeah, and I think that's very important also. You know, the social needs. We all need the social needs fulfilled in a spiritual environment. But, you know, the inner thing, she says, no. She says, especially kirtan. Kirtan is it's the Yuga Dharma. I've been preparing this. I've been reading all these things about kirtan, so that's why I'm kind of, I guess, what's in there, you speak, but amazing, just, you know, anyway, let me go on. So he explains this, and Vyas was eager to hear about Narada. Because why? Because he wanted to follow him. And spiritual life is about developing a new identity. We have the identity now, the hankara. I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. You know, that's the identity. So we need an identity as a servant of Krishna. And the way you develop an identity is you need exemplars or role models. And when you find one, then you really want to study carefully what they do. You know? And therefore it's actually important to have, it's really important to have devotees in all stations of life as exemplars. You know, there's married, we should have married people exemplars, renunciate exemplars, widow exemplars, teenage exemplars, if possible. You know, and when you find an exemplar, you can follow them, just like, you know, I'm a sannyasi, so I can become inspired by somebody. Like, I want to see a renunciate within my, you know, and how he followed and how they become successful. Either now, previous life, I'll read about them. I had this book that Mahamuni gave me, what's it called? The Ladder of Divine Descent, where it was talking about these Christian monks in the desert of, I forgot where it was, and Israel, Palestine, Sinai, someplace. And the ladder is, you know, see how these monks live. It was inspiring. So Vyas was eager to hear about Narada because he wanted to follow him. And not only follow him and realize it, but he had that duty of writing about it. So that was important. And a very nice point in the purport that was brought up that Vyas was inquiring, and that this is actually one of the main principles of devotional service. Saddharma Pitcha. You inquire about the right path. So he's asking these questions to Narada about his life. And that's what's going to be explained now. What did you do after the sages left? If he end, you know, I want to hear what now what happened? Now that you heard the Bhagavatam, now that you become inspired, so what did you do? And then Narada explains about his life. And we kind of ended off with one point, which I wrote something about Madan asked, I was the only son of my mother, who was not only a simple woman, but a maidservant as well. Since I was her only offspring, she had no other alternative for protection. She bound me with the tie of perfection, and I kind of related in that verse because there was no other alternative for protection. She bound me with the tie of affection, that was an impetus for it. And I think, you know, to explain that a little bit more, I think it goes something like this, is that there are different flavors of love, and those flavors have, you know, some type of impetus to invoke it, to invoke that love. We have love for people, and we may have love for our children, our friends, etc. And it's love, it's selfless, but there's always some kind of impetus for that love. Something about the person that attracted you. And that doesn't make the love unmotivated. It just has a particular impetus. Especially in particular flavors of love, And the flavor of love for a superior, it's actually called prabhuta jnan, knowledge of that person's greatness in one sense, that's called. And the flavor of that love is, the actual flavor of that love of a child to a parent is generally, there's a nurturing figure and a protective figure. Whether generally the mother is generally more the nurturing figure, the father is generally more the protective, the maintaining figure, the protective figure. The mother is more the maintaining figure. But, you know, the roles can be reversed or there can be different degrees. But, you know, you are my maintainer. You are my maintainer. You are my nurturer. So that's natural. There's a reason for that love, but once that love happens, it's selfless. And the reason is because the mother takes care of the child, and that's what's the mother's love? The mother's love, I am your maintainer. I am your maintainer. That's her flavor of love. And that's why in that motherly love, when the child grows older and becomes independent and competent, the mother, in that flavor of love, that I am your maintainer, always sees the child in need. Even if the child grows older and is what, she always sees him as a child in one sense. And that's why when Krishna wants motherly love, when the devotees want motherly love, Krishna appears as a child. To reciprocate. Why? Because that child is most in love, need, and that invokes the maximum degree of love for the mother. So there's an impetus for different flavors of love. And I just thought here in the thing that you know, for a woman in this particular culture, you know, she doesn't have a husband, she begins to see the potential of her son to be her protector. And therefore there's a special bond. And there's a very nice example of this also in the Bhagavatam in this purport, where it discussed that Krishna was closer to Kunti than he was his own mother. He was closer to Kunti, Krishna's aunt, than his own mother. And the answer is very, very interesting. Why? Because His mother had a husband to protect. The Kunti, was a widow. And this also has so therefore Krishna, you know, the sense of Krishna's, I am your protector. You know, there was a greater interest for that, and therefore he gravitated to us. And it doesn't compromise or make the love motivated. And even in our own spiritual life, one of the greatest impetuses for developing a relationship for Krishna is our own humility and dependence. It can attract Krishna's mercy. Because mercy means what? Mercy means that kindness is a undeserved kindness. So that was a side point. So it's setting up to this, that he himself is a young child, completely dependent on that affection. Completely. That was how he lived. And ultimately, more than anything else, we need love. And we can see the devastating effects that we have to somehow rectify and develop if that proper affection wasn't there when we're young. What that could do to the mind and how we have to actually live with that and develop that, but so he is, you know, that's what we live on. That's really our food is love. Our food is affection in different varieties, because we're souls, and that's the need of the soul. The need of the soul. What's the need of the soul? It's described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Every object is created with a corresponding function. The function of the soul is to love. And that's the greatest need of the soul. So his mother dies. And Prabhupada in the purport here said, this is the way of dragging a sincere soul nearer to God. And for him, because of his evolved inspiration for spiritual life, this was God's arrangement to bring him closer. It doesn't mean that that's what's best for everyone, that God has to take our family when we're young. But if it does happen, then somehow or other, that's best for the particular person. And here you can actually understand what's best, because he had such an impetus for that. And it's just like Raghunath Das Goswami. He was very highly spiritually evolved, and his opulence, wealth, family became an obstacle. And that's also the case with the gopis. They were highly spiritually evolved. So all those things were actually obstacles for them. It's not a general principle. And for others, it's not an obstacle. It's actually a need they have for their spiritual life. And that's why people get married. Why do they get married? In a spiritual sense. Because these are needs that are required for them to make them peaceful and suitable for spiritual life. And another person's need is to get out of that situation. But as we understand, especially in Kali Yuga, where sannyas is not even recommended, except in the cases of basically a preaching mission, that it's generally not a help for people. It's not what they should do. And I remember when Borijan gave this class too, I remember he put his hand on his head when he read this purport. This is the way of dragging a sincere soul nearer to God. And he said, oh my God, he said, even a sincere soul needs to be dragged. Even a sincere soul needs to be dragged. But basically what it means is this is what destiny or karma is. There's no good or bad for a devotee. It's just Krishna bringing us closer. Whatever happens to us is Krishna bringing us closer. And if you develop the eye and understanding of that, and the understanding on how to respond to that, you'll actually understand that. And whatever situation you're in, your main focus is, what am I supposed to learn from this? What am I supposed to learn from? There's a lesson to be learned. And that's why it happened, to teach me a lesson. What is the lesson to be learned? Sometimes you can't really learn it when you're in the midst of it, only when you look back. But it's best to try to learn the lesson. I've been meditating on that, especially in the last week, whatever difficulties I had to face in my life. But what is the lesson to be learned, and what is the lesson to be learned now? And I'm looking into my heart sincerely. What are anarthas? What's in my heart that's being pointed out that's valueless to my spiritual development? I'm finding so many things. You know, and as spiritual life gets deeper and deeper, the things that have to be removed are subtler and subtler. They're subtler and subtler. I'm seeing. I don't think mine are so subtle, but they're certainly more subtle than the ones before. And we have to actually change. There's so many things that are just accoutrements of the ahankara or the false ego. And sometimes it's not our business even to work on all of them, because what I'm saying is there's some things that are so subtle that to actually focus on that we'll be focusing on that, not the positive aspect of chanting and hearing. But at particular times in our spiritual evolution, and at every particular time, there's generally a particular anartha that's basically has to be removed to go to the next step. And we should try somehow to be cognizant of that. And that's a real challenge. Because, you know, it's part of our identity, it's part of our attachments, and it's not only part of our attachments, it's part of our philosophy sometimes, because generally attachments are supported so that we don't have to feel guilt. So it's just a little bit like that. So, tada tad aham ishasya bhaktanam sham abhipshita anugraham manyamana pratishtam isham utam. I took this as the special mercy of the Lord, who always desires benediction from his devotee. And so thinking, I started for the north. So this is an advanced soul. Something happens and he thinks, manyamana, thinking this way, right, that ishasya, of the Lord, bhaktanam, of the devotee, sham, it's mercy. Abhipshita, he's desiring mercy, and therefore anugraha, it's a special benediction. He understood, yes, this is a special benediction to make me free. And it's a special benediction because I'm capable now of being free. I'm capable of being unencumbered. And therefore the arrangement is made. But sometimes if we're encumbered, maybe our desire is not strong enough. Or Krishna wants to increase our desire. But Narada Muni. And of course, even if we become completely pure, it doesn't mean sannyas. Because sannyas means to, and this is the Bhagavad Gita, to give up the conception of possessiveness and not necessarily the object. And there's also a sense of someone, I just heard their voice. Be careful with it. Okay. Because it distracts the thoughts here. But yeah, this is the I have this point here. Anyway. Okay. Anyway, he took this as a special mercy, or always desires benediction for his devotees. And thinking so, I started to the north. Confidential devotees of the Lord see in every step a benedictory direction of the Lord. What is considered to be an odd or difficult moment in the mundane sense is accepted as the special mercy of the Lord. Mundane prosperity is a kind of material fever. And by the grace of the Lord, the temperature of this material fever is gradually diminished, and spiritual health is obtained step by step. Mundane people misunderstand it. So, very interesting. Mundane prosperity is a kind of material fever. It's not necessarily a material fever, but it's a kind of material fever because the external is a representative of the internal. It's a representative of the internal. And therefore, what you build up can be a reflection of your material desires. It's not always so. And not only a reflection of your material desires, but your material desires beyond your needs. And different people have different needs. I always remember that lady, Mercedes. She was very, very sincere. Remember in the Upper West Side that I used to have contact with. And she was so sincere. And she was a very aristocratic person in many ways, dressed very fine. But that was her need. That was her need. But above your need. And different people have different needs. I don't want to go into this. And therefore, sometimes to help a devotee, the Lord reduces the external. And it's a good analogy, just like a fever. It's not the disease, but it represents the disease. And it could kill you in itself, too. But it reduces the external. And that actually, in many situations, can help someone to come more in contact with the self, which is a servant of Krishna, because you build up this external that's simply increasing the conception. I am the enjoyer, I am the controller, and you have certain things that are representative of that, like my bigger car, my better, you know, like this, my bigger car, you ride around. I remember about 20, 25 years ago, one of my students, I was coming to the West Coast, and he arranged that programs for me, and he'd have this brahmachari drive me around. Now, this brahmachari is very interesting. He was, I forgot what company, but he was the heir to one of the Fortune 500 companies. It's a very famous company. So somehow or other, he was a brahmachari, but then his grandmother died, and he was left millions and millions of dollars, a huge sum of money. So it was really, so he had this Rolls Royce car, and he was driving me to these programs, and like, you know, here I was from India and things like that. He was driving me, and we're going a couple of hours to, you know, another city, and I was driving. And, you know, I could see how much I was identifying sitting in the front seat of that car, you know. I was actually thinking in one sense. So that would represent material fever. And if it was taken away, of course, I was just temporarily into it, but if I had my own car like that, and that was the thing, it may be removed. So there's an analogy. So anyway, the basic thing is that this is Narada is just seeing how in his life, he's seeing it as the Supreme Lord's kindness, that Krishna is bringing him closer and removing, in one sense, any obstacles that he may have. Of course, it's not like Krishna is killing his mother, so he can go forward. And, you know, the karma is very, very intricate. It's arranged and waged for everyone's benefit. But somehow or other, if you look at individually, it's enough. So after my departure, I passed through many flourishing metropolises, towns, villages, animal farms, mines, agricultural lands, valleys, flower gardens, nursery gardens, and natural forests. So this is very interesting here that, and this is actually an interesting process of self-realization. It's mentioned in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. It's also mentioned in the story of Gopkumar and Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that there's a spiritual path where you experience different creations, and that experience at your level of spiritual evolution, you give them up. It's like an indirect... Anyway, he's... experiencing all of these things, but actually in Narada's case, by hearing the Bhagavatam, the spiritual impetus was so strong that he was just going straight for the goal. And this concept of going to the north is a standard concept of sannyas, because actually as you go to the north, in many ways, especially in India, it becomes more spiritual, especially you go up to the Himalayas. He actually became attached to this, the spiritual life. Just like I'm up here now, and it's you know, at this time of the year, it's absolutely beautiful up here. And I have, by the kindness of Sachisup and Kaden Rita, I have my own place here. I'm surrounded right to my right, within hand's reach, by all my key books. And, you know, the crisp morning air, it's beautiful. So what to speak of the Himalayas, the spiritual life, you know, no distractions. So the tendency was go to the north. And there's also austerities, it's cold, whatever the case is. But here's the point that Prabhupada wants to bring out, the purport. After getting an impetus in spiritual life, Sri Narada Muni, even though a mere child, did not waste time for a single moment with economic development, although he passed towns, villages, mines, and industries. He continually went on to a progressive spiritual emancipation. Srimad Bhagavatam is a repetition of history which happened some hundreds of millions of years ago. As said herein, only the most important factors of history are picked up to be recorded in this transcendental literature. So this is classic spiritual life. Buddha Sayat Mika Buddhi, aka Ha Kuru Nandana. Buddha Sayat Mika, that's its mind. Buddha Sayat Mika, it's fixed. Aka Ha, it's fixed. In one thing. Of course, it's fixed in the goal, and then you have to make so many choices of what's helpful that goal and what's not. But he did not become distracted to that goal. And that's the result of sadhu sangha. That's the result of proper hearing. It's not artificial renunciation. It's coming to higher and higher points of spiritual development where you can focus on the goal and move towards the goal without distraction to anything else. So this is the example of Narada Muni. We may not be able to do it as quick as he is, but we're still on the same path. And spiritual life means the goal. You have to focus on the goal. You can't practice sadhana. You can't have a practice unless you have an objective or a sadhya or goal. And that's how Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu actually defines spiritual practice, sadhana bhakti. It's the utilization of the senses for the objective of getting bhava, or love, or devotion. And therefore, it's very important also to hear about the goal. That's why in these classes, there's different subject matters, but sometimes I teach the 10th canto. Because we should hear about what the goal is and become attracted to that goal. That's actually also the basis of Raganuga Bhakti. You're following the Lagatnikas, the perfected soul. You're becoming attracted to the perfected life, the God-centered life, the Krishna-centered life, where everything is moving to the absolute reality, to the pleasure of the absolute reality, which is fair. Because it's moving for everything. Actually, love of Godhead is fair. Because love of Godhead means love for everything. You love God, and everything's part of God, and you love everything as part of God. And Prabhupada in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the introduction to the nectar of devotion, makes that beautiful point. Where to repose that loving propensity? So it can be fully satisfied. That's Krishna. And therefore, it doesn't discount a vision of the world of seeing things as Krishna's energy. And therefore, learning how to relate with things in the world in a spiritual attitude of service for those things and in relationship to God and to God itself. So, Narada Muni goes on. He's telling Vyasa, I pass through hills and mountains full of reservoirs of various minerals like gold, silver, and copper, and through tracts of land with reservoirs of water filled with beautiful lotus flowers, fit for the denizens of heaven, decorated with bewildered bees. Banarasya. And singing birds, bewildered bees and singing birds. So he's seeing all of God's creation. I then pass through many forests of rushes, bamboo, reeds, sharp grass, weeds, and caves, which were very difficult to go through alone. I visited deep, dark, and dangerous, fearful forests, which were the play yards of snakes, owls, and jackals. So he's Pari Vrajakacharya. He's a mendicant who's wandering, and he's experiencing all varieties of God's creation. And Prabhupada explains that this is to gain faith in God and strength of mind, as well as to enlighten the inhabitants of the message of God. So this is a Pari Vrajakacharya. It's the third order of sannyas. You're wandering. But the idea of wandering is, in this sense, in the traditional sense also, is you tend to organize your environment naturally for your needs and comforts. One does this. Of course one does this. But in doing that, one tends to develop the conception that I'm actually the controller. And it can develop a sense, if not careful, of, would you like to come for class?
No.
Okay, Baji. Then shut the door, okay, because I'm speaking. Thank you. She's straightforward. She's far out, too, if you know Baji. That's the middle daughter of Sachi Sita. People I stay with here. So you tend to develop it in that way. And therefore, you develop a conception that I'm the controller and the enjoyer. So the idea of sannyas and traveling, especially as a spiritual process, is, when you travel, and especially as a sannyas with vows of poverty, and just, you can't do this anymore in India, but, you just wander. And lo and behold, you get shelter. You find a nice tree. Lo and behold, you're thirsty. There's a clean stream of water. Lo and behold, you're hungry. Someone brings you food. You get some berries or something. And then you begin to start to see that actually it's God that's the maintainer. He's been actually maintaining all along. And we can see that. Although we try to maintain, God can change. He can change it positively. He can change it negatively. There's five factors of action, and one is the endeavor. And the illusion is that the one factor of the endeavor, in terms of action or doership, is the soul factor. And that's an illusion. We see that people make endeavors, and there are other factors that override those endeavors also. But although we make the endeavor and we set up our needs and comforts, we start to think that it's just our endeavor alone. But actually what's happening is God is reciprocating or not with that endeavor. But when you no longer make an endeavor for these things, then you see the other factor, which is the super soul arranging everything. And then you feel, again, the same thing. He's maintaining, and you develop love. Because what is your sense of? He's my maintainer. It's like your mother. He's my maintainer. And then you're protected. Dangerous snake comes, and in your heart, God's in the heart of the snake, and he withers away. And I've seen this in India so many times with sadhus or Brahmins. When they see a snake, there's no fear. And I get a little bit afraid. I mean, I don't grow up in that environment. Anyway, I get a little bit afraid. And then they just look at me and they say, sadhu deke. The snake saw a sadhu. So it's confidence. Anyway, the protection is there. The maintenance is there. And it actually develops them. It develops within them. So this was part of Narada's development. He put himself completely at the dependence on God. And we do that in any way, in any ashram. Even, the system in an ashram of giving a percentage of money to charity or spiritual people or something, it's kind of a faith. And whenever you do, you live your life, when you choose to live your life by principles, that doesn't 100% align up with your immediate prosperity and benefit. It doesn't line up with that, you know, necessarily. And therefore, by doing it and seeing how by following Dharma, what's right, it actually makes my life auspicious. You start to gain faith in God. So this is actually, you know, Narada is in the sense of someone who's awakened that full spirit of detachment and leaves home and just wanders, but one can do it in any sphere of life just by doing what's right. Even if it's not lined up with your material calculation for your benefit and need, like someone gives charity, you know, and you go, I could have done something else. Now, in the purport, Prabhupada said something about sannyasa. In this age of Kali, sannyasa is forbidden for ordinary men. One who changes his dress to make propaganda is a different man from the original ideal of the ideal sannyasi. I mean, the rules that they followed were not possible. One should, however, take the vow to stop social intercourse completely and devote life exclusively to the service of the Lord. The change of dress is only a formality. Lord Chaitanya did not accept the name of a sannyasi, and in this age of Kali, the so-called sannyasi should not change their former names, following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya. In this age, devotional service of hearing and repeating the glories of the Lord is strongly recommended, and one who takes the vow of renunciation of family life need not imitate the Parivrajakacharya like Narada or Lord Chaitanya, but may sit down at some holy place and devote his whole time and energy to hear and repeatedly chant the holy scriptures left by the great acharyas like the six great swamis Vrindavan. In fact, when I was studying this, I'm actually starting a new section in my journals. I don't know what I'll call it, but it's just comments on the Shastra. And I was commenting on this, of how people have a narrow view of Prabhupada sometimes. Because here, you know, devotional service of chanting and hearing is strongly recommended, and one who takes the vow of renunciation of family life may need not imitate the Parivrajakacharyas like Narada or Lord Chaitanya. They may sit down in a holy place and devote his whole time and energy to hear him repeatedly chant the holy scriptures. So it's not like you have to feel guilty. I'm not following Prabhupada if you go to Vrindavan and you chant and hear. Here he's recommending it. He wasn't one-dimensional in that way. Prabhupada had a view according to the individual. But here he's saying you can do that. Because this program is going to come up, I'm going to stop here. But I'm pretty excited about this section, because what you'll also see by this section is what's coming up is how to meditate, how to become qualified to meditate, and a systematic understanding of what are these stages and practices of devotional service. Very wonderful point. And we'll go through Narada's personal ecstasies. And such an interesting point. He gets sakshad darshan, means he directly sees the Lord. But then he can't maintain that vision. And there's subtleties in his consciousness that don't allow him to achieve that perfection again, even though he does the same thing to get it. And therefore that shows that achieving the Supreme Lord, it's not just enough. You can't just imitate externally. There's a consciousness that has to accompany the activity. It's not that you can just outline that this is how I'll get prema, this is how I'll get bhava. There's very subtle things there's actually very subtle things in the consciousness that people have to actually cultivate. And one thing you have to cultivate is a lack of ego, a lack of sense of doership, and a sense of dependence. In other words, your practices, although it's an endeavor, you have to do that endeavor in a sense that it's not the endeavor alone. Without the mercy of God, I cannot achieve my perfection. And the endeavor has to be accompanied by a natural sense of dependence and humility. Anyway, all these things are coming. Anyone like to ask a question?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is
Gail. Hi, Bogyo. Yeah.
you were, I think, quoting, talking to Noah Thakur, and you were talking about the fact that the soul, like everything else, has a function.
Yeah.
And, you know, it determines its nature.
Yeah.
And the function of the soul, he said, is to love.
To serve. And service means love, because serve means to please, and without love, the activity is not pleasurable.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I want to know where the need to be loved fits into that, or is it simply a need of only the conditioned soul?
Well, if you want to fit into the whole scheme, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and he enjoys love, and you enjoy love from someone who also loves you, so Krishna has the need to be loved. And we're part of Krishna, and because we're part of Krishna, we also have a part of his qualities. And because it's actually a relationship, relationship means both. It's reciprocal. That's also in the soul. The soul has a need to be loved. The soul has a need to be loved because it's part of God. And that's what nourishes the soul. Love. And love has two aspects. Just like I give the example, if you want to relish motherly love, right, if you really want to fully experience that, you have to love a mother and you have to be loved by a mother. And when we look at God himself, he's the supreme enjoyer. He has the desire to be loved by the devotee, but he also has to be the lover of the devotee. So I think it's the same thing with the devotees. To fully actually experience love, it's a reciprocal relationship. You need to experience it from both sides. Okay, Gail, this question takes a lot more time and need, and because I'm watching all these people come in the program, the depth of thought I need to fully answer it is not here right now, but that's the best I can do now. But Gail, I may call you sometime today.
Okay.
I don't know when. Probably in the afternoon. If you're free, we'll discuss this further, and then we can also discuss it the next class.
Thank you.
Okay. I realize I don't have time for questions, actually, because of... the need to be loved. Yeah, they're part of God. And, the need to be loved is just a complementary part of the need for love because that's the main impetus for love. The main impetus, love is a reciprocation. So to actually love, you have to feel love. That's the main impetus for love. The main impetus for love is love. So even to perform that function, we ourselves have to have that need to experience it. But we'll discuss it more, okay? I'm just going to have to end today because all the people are here.
Mm.
But you know what I wish one day, Gail?
Mm.
That, you know, one day, like when you're in Vrindavan, where I'm giving class every day, and you build on the points. You know what I'm saying? This is after 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you're right there. But this is a, yeah, this we got to go. Okay. Thank you, Gail.
Okay.
Anybody else like to just say Hare Krishna from anywhere in the States or world? I have a few more minutes, so it'd be nice to get from
Maharaj.
Shastra. Hi, Bill, Shastra.
Hi.
Right, I will come see you, I think, next week. That's nice. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Anastasia.
Anastasia, Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming on.
I'm very, 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 very happy to hear you today.
Okay, yeah. Now that must be, what, about 1 o'clock there? Am I right?
It's again on Sundays. It's afternoon time. And
okay.
On Wednesdays is 2 o'clock, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and Wednesday is tomorrow. Okay, so that may be difficult. Okay. I'm watching all these nice, respectable people here eagerly coming upstairs. I have, like, where I sit, there's, I guess they call French doors. I don't know. You know, like those panes. And it's the entrance to my place. If you come straight, you come into my apartment. Starting? Okay, come in. If you go up the left, so I'm seeing all the people come in. It's so nice. Good. Thank you, Anastasia. Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisances.
Della.
Yes. Hi, Bill.
Good. I got your email about your new address. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Who's this?
Gordon.
Gordon, we have to kind of touch base, you know?
Yes.
We didn't
complete
that. I haven't forgot that.
Quite all right.
Why don't you do this? Try to call me in the afternoon, okay? If you're free. Or
yes,
tomorrow, ma'am. Anytime. Okay, thank you. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Bol Maharaj, Bhagavati.
Bhagavati, thank you for listening. I'm thinking maybe I have to speak to Deva Deva and maybe coming Itanagari Way next weekend, either before, during, or after. I have to get the dates. Okay, we'll keep you informed, okay?
Sure, thank you.
Thank you, Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj, Samantha. I'm back.
Samantha, okay, I was thinking that I'm coming into the city next week. I'll call you later, but I'd like to visit with you and your son. We'll coordinate it, okay?
Perfect, thank you. Thank you.
We'll see if it works. Okay, welcome back. Okay. Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Henry.
Henry, how are you both? Nice to hear from you. Wow. This is such an auspicious day, hearing from so many of my friends. Thank you, Henry.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Good. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay. I was almost thinking I should take the cell phone up to the studio when the kirtan begins, but I can't do that actually today. I got to get going. Okay? Hare Krishna. Thank you. Vanshakalpa Purugya Shakupa Sindhu Bayeva Chapatitaram Pavane Bhavane.